Hello, and welcome to the fifth episode of Season 3 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Last week, Graham, we promised to look at the mutual evaluation reports that allow us to understand and compare anti-money laundering regimes between different countries.
That's right, Ray. These have become fundamental to how firms judge country risk. So it's, I think, worth spending some time getting to know how they work.
Yeah, and I think to understand the thinking behind MERs, Graham, we have to start with the foundation of the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, 30 years ago.
30 years old, Ray. Ooh, I wish I was 30.
Yes, Graham, I believe you were born in black and white, weren't you?
Yes, Ray. I only actually acquired colour in the 1970s, which is why I was christened Graham and not Pink Ham.
Boom, boom, Graham. Well, in 1989, the G7, that's the group of seven leading industrial nations, met in Paris. And actually, this week, their child organisation, the FATF, are meeting in Paris again. So that makes this a timely episode at which to look at their work and the output of the FATF, the Mutual Evaluation Report. So the G7 then, Graham, Paris, 1989.
Yeah, remember it well, Ray.
The
G7.
Who were the
G7?
The
G7. They were Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the UK and the US.
Yes, Graham, except at the time it was West Germany, because this was just before the fall of the wall. And also the EU was separately represented at the summit too, alongside the four EU member states who qualified for G7 membership.
Right, Ray, but let's try and keep on track. The summit established the FATF organisation, didn't it?
Yes, Graham, it did. It was a development of the discussion at that summit of the drugs problem. And it was noted that combating the money laundering that resulted from illegal drug manufacture and distribution would hit the drug trade where it hurt.
See, that's interesting, isn't it, Ray? So the FATF started as a weapon, effectively, in the war against drugs.
Yes. In fact, their brief didn't extend to encompass terrorism finance until after the 2001 World Trade Center and Pentagon attacks. This will become relevant when we look at the pre- and post-2012 recommendations.
OK, so let's talk about these recommendations then. So when did they come out?
Initially in 1990, Graham. There were 40 of them. And until they were revised and the scope widened in 1996, their sole focus was drug money-related money laundering.
So what was the idea behind them, Ray?
The point of the recommendations was to define standards to cover the criminal justice system and law enforcement, international cooperation, and the financial system and its regulation.
Yeah, so when countries all have very different rules and structures, the criminals can effectively use those differences to their advantage and evade detection and capture.
Indeed. And of course, countries still have those differences. But the recommendations are an objective standard against which every jurisdiction can be judged. That's the idea behind the mutual evaluation report, of course.
Yeah, but before we get there, let's just finish looking at the development of the standards. The 1996 version didn't last forever, did it, Ray?
Well, what does, Graham?
Fair point.
So, yeah, following the 9/11 attacks, the 40 standards were supplemented by 8 special recommendations that addressed the combating of terrorism finance. A 9th was subsequently introduced before the whole thing was overhauled in 2012, and the 40 plus 9 were integrated into a new 40 standards.
And that set of 40 recommendations remains the version in use today. It's the version that forms the basis for the EU's 4th anti-money laundering directive, which EU member states have been obliged to enact into their national law since June 2017.
That's right, Graham.
So the recommendations have existed for nearly 30 years in their current form for more than 7. And it's worth saying that virtually every country in the world is now a member of the FATF or an associated body pledged to implement and comply with the recommendations.
That's a fair summary, Graham, and I can sense where you're taking this.
You know me, Ray. I'm all about the setup and the punchline. Seriously, though, given where we are, why are money laundering and terrorism financing, A, still a thing, and B, tackled differently by different national governments?
Well, I think we know the answer to A is a complicated one, Graham. Why is it still a thing? Money laundering and terrorism financing still exist thanks to their profitability and the other incentives around them. The ingenuity and persistence of the bad guys, and imperfect national and international regulatory, legislative and law enforcement frameworks.
Of course, but the second question is a fair one, isn't it? Why is there such inconsistency between the ways that different countries go about fighting the good fight?
And what's your thinking there, Graham?
Well, Ray, it reminds me more than anything of the way that different banks in a country have different financial crime measures themselves. They have different policies, different procedures, different systems and controls. Mm-hmm. Some are more effective than others, but often two firms will adopt quite different approaches, both of which meet law and regulation and have, frankly, similar outcomes.
Yes, because different banks have different business models, different customers, products, legacy systems and so on. And of course, different risk appetites.
Yeah, and in most respects, I guess it's the same with countries.
Do countries have business models, Graham?
Yes, Ray, I think so. Think about how governments seek to attract financial investments to their own countries, for instance, and have laws and bodies that evolve to meet certain challenges unique to their own circumstances, their geography, their geology, their climate, their traditions, including criminal traditions, and so on.
I suppose that's true.
So every country will approach the implementation of these standards in a different way. It's like asking 10 different artists each to paint a tree.
Yeah, I get it. And when we think about EU members whose approaches all need to meet the fourth AML directive, even there we have big differences between individual member states' implementations.
Yeah, so the concept of the mutual evaluation report is a really important one. Mm. It's an independent assessment of a given country's legal and regulatory system and environment against the FATF recommendations. And crucially, it looks not only at technical compliance with the recommendations, but also at the effectiveness of the regime.
Now, that's a relatively new development, Graham, isn't it?
Yes, it hasn't always been part of the MER, but it's a really valuable addition.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. Why is it mutual?
Because countries' own people in government regulation, law enforcement and so on are co-opted to assess other countries.
I see. So the UK might go and do the MER on Turkey and they might do ours.
Well, not quite, Ray. Several countries will work together and contribute members to what becomes an ad hoc team for each country's MER.
Okay, so that's going to minimise the risk, I suppose, of political shenanigans of the back-scratching variety.
Oh, you cynic, you. although that sort of thing can be hard to eliminate entirely. And when you talk to people off the record who have participated in the process, there are stories of political pressure being applied.
Although hopefully the professionalism and integrity of the people assessing means that that doesn't succeed.
It certainly would not with the people I know who've acted as assessors.
Great. Okay, so that's the idea behind mutuality. Does each team decide for itself how it goes about assessing?
Oh no, Ray. There are detailed methodologies and procedures that must be followed to make sure the assessments are productive, fair and consistent.
Mm. At the FATF website, anyone can download the methodology that runs to 176 pages and the current round procedures, which make up a further 44.
Oh, yes, they are not mucking about.
So, can you talk us through how the assessment is conducted, Graham?
Yeah, at a high level, it's composed of two elements, a technical compliance assessment and an effectiveness compliance assessment.
So, technical compliance presumably means how comprehensively they've implemented the 40 recommendations within the country's legal and regulatory framework.
Yes, but before they start the analysis, the evaluators are expected to fully understand the country's money laundering and terrorism financing risks.
Okay, so a bit like a bank's enterprise-wide risk assessment.
Exactly.
And this assessment is broken down into four elements, as I understand it. Firstly, the nature and extent of the money laundering and terrorism finance risks. Secondly, the economic and financial circumstances of the country.
Because that will affect how material some of the risks are in that particular jurisdiction.
Exactly. The economic risks in a very mature financial centre are very different from those in a newly emerging economy, with very little in the way of organised financial markets.
Yeah, now that makes sense.
Then they need to look at the structural elements that underpin the anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism finance system.
Okay, so we're talking about the law enforcement, judicial, tax, regulatory regimes, for example.
Yes, and finally, any other contextual factors that might influence the way anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism finance measures are implemented.
Well, like whether the jurisdiction is, I don't know, currently at war, say, or that a big chunk of it's been annexed by another country, for example.
That would likely need to be taken into account, yes, Graham.
Yes, and then they assess the technical compliance. So what does that entail, Ray?
Well, it means looking at every element of the 40 recommendations and assessing whether they've been fully implemented through the jurisdiction's specific legislative and institutional systems.
And then they rate the implementation, don't they, through a set of very specific ratings?
Yes, ranging from C, which means fully compliant, to LC, which is largely compliant, PC, partly compliant, NC, which is non-compliant, and NA, which is where a particular recommendation is not applicable as that element can't feature for specific legal or structural reasons.
Okay, and effectiveness?
For effectiveness, the FATF has written a set of 11 immediate outcomes which the recommendations are deemed to be required to achieve, and the effectiveness assessment looks for evidence of those outcomes.
Okay, so these are not related directly to each of the specific recommendations then?
No, Graham. The recommendations collectively have been put together to achieve these immediate outcomes, which should then achieve, if they are indeed effective, three intermediate outcomes.
Okay, which are?
Well, firstly, that policy, coordination and cooperation mitigate the money laundering and terrorism finance threats.
Okay, so effectively we're saying that all the parts are working together properly.
Exactly. Secondly, that proceeds of crime and funds in support of terrorism are prevented from entering the financial system or are detected and reported.
Okay, but that's rather predicated on the belief that these proceeds or funds are always detectable. It's quite hard to measure the effectiveness if you can't be sure it's capable of being measured.
Which is a very good and important point. And finally, money laundering threats are detected and disrupted, and criminals are sanctioned and deprived of illicit proceeds. Terrorist financing threats are detected and disrupted, terrorists are deprived of resources, and those who finance terrorism are sanctioned, thereby contributing to the prevention of terrorist acts.
It's a great quote, Ray, but I can't help thinking that the same thing applies.
Graham, I completely agree. It's very difficult to be certain that any particular jurisdiction is meeting that standard of effectiveness, when even the best minds available can't give a confident reply to the question, how much dirty money is flowing around the world's financial system? If you can't answer that question, it's hard to know how confident you can be with the rest.
Agreed, but at least they are making the attempt.
Exactly. Much better to try and measure outcomes than inputs. We know far too many banks that have excellent policies, processes and procedures on paper.
Which is largely where they stay.
Exactly. And one of the reasons for the introduction of the effectiveness element was the belief that there were countries in the same position. Very comprehensive laws, for instance, but just not enforced.
Yeah. So what happens after the MER is published, Ray?
Well, the publication itself is quite an involved process, but it will culminate in recommendations for action, which the jurisdiction will then consider and take forward as appropriate.
So the country will decide what deficiencies it wants to prioritise and what specific changes it wants to introduce.
Indeed. Depending on the nature and scale of deficiencies, the FATF may schedule a follow-up visit at a fixed future time. That would culminate in the production of a follow-up report, an FUR, that would update ratings where there had been action since the mutual evaluation report. Sometimes there can be a whole series of follow-up visits and reports if a country has a lot to do.
Yeah, and occasionally the FATF will issue a public statement telling the country off if it feels they are dragging their heels.
Yes, I always skim those and do a however count.
You'll have to explain that, Ray.
Well, FATF are very fond of the construction that goes, country X has a strong framework for XYZ. However, the number of prosecutions is negligible. So you look at the report, and the number of times however appears in the statement is a decent guide to how cross they are with the country.
Yeah, that's a bit like when somebody apologises and follows it up with a however, which is kind of saying, I'm not really sorry.
Yeah, quite.
Okay, I get that. And that's a really good tip. So overall, then, if you want to see how well a country complies with the FATF recommendations, both technically and in their implementation, you should read the most recent MER and subsequent FURs, and finally see if there are any public statements.
Yes, Graham, and helpfully you can see all of those on the webpage that FATF maintains for almost every country in the world.
Great. Although we have of necessity hugely simplified what is a complex process, conducting a mutual evaluation report, hopefully we've given our listeners some appreciation of what's involved.
Yes. And Graham, you're actually going to be at the FATF plenary later this week in Paris, so maybe next time you can, you know, give us the fly on the wall view.
I will, Ray. I'm only there for 2 days. The plenary itself lasts the entire week, but I hopefully we'll get a feel for what's been going on, and I will happily report back next time we get together.
Fabulous. So where do we go from here then?
Well, Ray, as we've already mentioned, the MER, the Mutual Evaluation Report, is a very significant contributor to country risk, and that's a factor used by all banks in assessing the money laundering, terrorism financing risks of their clients. So I think next time maybe we should look in depth at country risk and how the MER and other factors can be used to contribute to that assessment.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dark Money Files. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or your normal podcast provider. Thanks.